Bone crunched and Shrek fell backwards. Taroga spun, driving his wrist blades into the man's soft belly. Astoundingly, the man raised the bludgeon again, trying to attack even as the blood poured down its body, even as it died. Taroga jerked his blades free and grabbed Shrek, pulling him back from the attacking men. The leader shouted something, and the men circled, facing outwards, their weapons at the ready. They ignored the three who bled at their feet. Combat through incompetence was not a hunt. Taroga had failed. The only honorable choice was to turn off his camouflage and fight, to face death. But Taroga was not thinking about the hunt or his honor. He only felt a profound dismay at the realization that he had so badly underestimated these creatures. Shrek was backing away, and Taroga backed away at his side. The men raised their weapons and started after them, showing their teeth, shouting in their incomprehensible tongue, loud and furious. After a few steps, Shrek turned and ran, cradling his injured arm. Taroga clutched at the arrow in his thigh and ran after them, his humiliation complete. They followed the sound of running steps, but in seconds the sounds were lost. And although there were a few strange green splashes to be seen, spattered and far apart, glowing like fire, those two dried up after only a short distance. Beneath the shadows of trees, they could not track which way the invaders had gone. Jarl called a halt, and the men returned to their camp to investigate where the attack had taken place. There were marks on the grounds as of footprints, but too big and oddly shaped to be a man's. There was a small pool of the liquid green fire at the base of the big tree, next to where the three dead men lay. Jarl counted Helta's arrows. There was one in the tree, a second on the ground, its tip bent. A third was missing. Stelgar squatted by the green pool. He carefully touched it with his finger.
"What is it?" Bjarke asked.
Stelgar shrugged.
"Helta is missing an arrow. He hit something."
"It is Draugr,"
Geir said nervously.
"The Draugr must bleed green."
"Draugr don't use weapons,"
Stelgar said, and motioned at the dead men. Helta the bowman's skull was cleft in twain. Thrine's throat was cleanly cut, and Steen the Reckless had been stabbed in the gut by dual swords.
"They don't hide either."
"There were two of them,"
Bjarke said, pointing out the strange prints at the tree and just east of it.
"One rested here, the other came this way."
"Helta heard something," Rungvald said.
He had also been on watch, as had Thoralf.
"I saw him take off his helmet to better hear. He shot only a moment later."
"I saw something," Thoralf said. "The air moved like shadows."
Geir looked around anxiously.
"We are tracked by monsters."
"Grow some balls or fuck off to your mama's teat,"
Stelgar said, standing.
"If they bleed, they can die. And if Helta heard them, so will we. We know to listen now, and we know to watch for shadows in the air. If they return, we will kill them."
Jarl nodded, along with most of the others. Stelgar was the voice of reason.
"Gather branches," Jarl said. "Keep in pairs and threes, with one to watch and listen. We will build a pyre for the fallen, and to warm ourselves for our journey to the keep. From the tower we can hold off any foe."
The men nodded and broke away. Jarl gazed down at the dead men, at the two wet pieces of Helta's head hanging from his broken neck. Stelgar nudged one with his boot. A powerful blow, to be sure, and it had come from almost directly above. Helta had been a tall man, too.
"Walking corpses and green-blooded giants we can't see,"
Stelgar said.
"You sure you want this keep?"
Jarl laughed. "What better path to Valhall? Any fool can be killed by men."
Stelgar laughed along with him, a full bright sound in the cold air. The arrow had to be cut out of Taroga's leg, leaving a good-sized hole in his suit. A tab of disinfectant and a skin seal took care of him. But he did not meet his teacher's eye, as was appropriate. Shrek's forearm was broken in six places. He sleeved it himself and injected a painkiller, his head even lower than Taroga's.
One-Eye wished he did not have to share in their shame, but he'd known their deficits and sent them to hunt men anyway.
A hunter's code was strict,
but early mistakes were tolerated as part of the learning process. They had been arrogant and reckless, as might have been expected. It was their decision to flee that was unacceptable. Bested and injured, they had run. He looked coldly at the two shamed and silent Yautza in the medical bay. It would be within his rights to kill them, but there was his own culpability to consider. The last time One-Eye had hunted this world, there had been no fighters quite like these. A clicking from the ship called his attention. One-Eye stepped to the console closest and raised a screen, running his claws down the lines of symbol. Katanu was accessing sensory information. Their travelers were crossing an open field, moments from the barrier to the village, or whatever it was. Katanu was south of the men, but close. He was counting the villagers and checking for forged metals behind the village wall. Katanu's patience, his lack of arrogance, these were the traits of a hunter. One Eye looked back at the disgrace Yautja, thinking. Taroga and Shrek might yet be given a chance to redeem themselves, either by exhibiting excellence or by dying well. There would be no trophies, but they might erase their shame.
The men you were hunting are about to enter a village, where there are four times their number, One-Eyed said. A hunter worthy of his blood might shed all of his weapons, and stand without armor, without hiding, and face his prey with bare claws. A hunter worthy of his blood might even win, and if he dies, he might die cleanly.
Taroga and Shrek were on their feet before he stopped talking.
You will not disrupt Katanu's hunt, One-Eye said. Get in the way and I will carry your heads to your fathers and tell them of your dishonor.
Taroga fastened his suit and started chucking its armored plates. With only one good arm, Shrek struggled to keep up, his blades clattering to the floor. One-Eye watched their sincere, solemn preparations without comment. There was a chance that they might survive. Even injured, both were technically proficient. He would move the ship closer to Katanu's position, the better to clean up afterwards and to keep the two disgraced hunters from charging in prematurely. And he had already decided he would not be bringing any more of his students to the man's world. Hunting men was a skilled warrior's game. Skelt's keep sat against the low peak of an isfell at the top of long slopes where the snow was starting to build. The sword son and his party walked through fields of bowed winter rye, past empty houses and empty farms. They saw signs of Asker's siege, dead men and rotting horses, and the remains of large fires where bodies had been burned, blackened bones sticking up from the snow. Stelgar pointed out drag marks through the crops, long lines of crushed rye and dead barley leading toward the keep. The one house they stopped at had dried blood on the walls and dried shit and vomit and torn clothing. What they didn't see was a single living person. The snow was picking up as they finally climbed within sight of the keep, thick flakes coming down. No one guarded the high wooden wall. The heavy gate was standing wide open. The tower of stone peered over the top, gray and empty, its windows like dead eyes. A few hundred paces from the wall, Jarl turned to look at his allies, his friends and brothers. He saw wariness, but no fear. Whatever they were to face, hidden giants, madmen, Draugr, these men would fight well.
There seems no need for stealth, Jarl said. We have come for the keep and we'll have it. Stay within reach until we know what we face, and watch for shadows in the air. They should watch for us, Thorolf said, and everyone grinned, and Jarl's heart was full. What better feeling than to head into battle with skilled men united against an unknown foe? They would win or they would die, and both had their rewards.
That was when a man screamed from behind the keep's walls, his single hoarse cry joined by another, a third, a dozen, twice that, too many to count. The wordless shrieks of pain or anger or hunger, the sounds of lunacy and loss rose into the snowy sky like the howls of wolves.
Odin owns you all, Jarl cried, and they stormed the gate.
Disguised by the falling ice, Katanu closed the distance with his travelers as they hesitated outside of the opening in the wall. They carried themselves at the ready, clearly expecting conflict.
Inside the enclosure, men cried out, and the leader led his shouting travelers through the gate. Katanu followed them. He could see the heat signature of many men pouring out from the large structure farthest north, still crying as they ran toward the travelers. Most carried no weapons. Many moved unsteadily, falling and staggering. Katanu veered away from the travelers, toward one of the several massive heaps of dead herd animals, swollen with rot, dead men piled on top of them. The travelers circled up, facing outward, screaming like unblooded at their first kill. The men from the structure ran and stumbled into view, and Katanu could see there was something wrong with them. More than half wore little or no clothing. Many shook as if from fever and fell down and were trampled by others. Their legs were striped with thin waste, and they made strange faces as they shouted and called. Sickness. Katanu checked his mask's filter read, as he had regularly since leaving the ship. The humidity was up, eyes falling ever more heavily from the sky, but he didn't see... There, a high concentration of organic material was in the air, some kind of alkaloid. The makeup was that of a fungal spore. The fields outside the village were cultivated, heavy with cereal grasses. Had their crops become infected? Their meat? Had they ingested the spore, or was it carried on the air? The first sick men had reached the travelers. Screaming, weaponless, they attacked, and the travelers stepped fearlessly into the fight. Katanu trilled and shifted on his feet, excited to watch the unfolding battle, until he realized that a number of the charging sick men had abruptly changed direction and were running toward him. The people of the keep shouted gibberish, their eyes wide and rolling, their hands mostly empty. But their obvious madness was a weapon in itself, as they charged unflinching into the swinging swords and axes of Jarl's men. Jarl saw soldiers of both Skeld and Oscar among the villagers and farmers. Whatever plague had come, it had taken all. The first man to reach Jarl wore shit-stained breeches and nothing else. Jarl swung and slashed the man's throat. Steaming blood poured into the snow as the man collapsed, gurgling. Three more attackers took his place. A naked woman with slack hanging tits covered in bloody vomits screeched and clawed at him. Jarl gutted her quickly as a man wearing a stained cloak grabbed for Jarl's shield, and a teenaged boy threw himself at Jarl's feet, scrabbling at his boots with rotten fingers.
"My father's boots!" the boy cried. "You stole them!"
Jarl slashed and hit, kicking, cursing as he stomped the mad boy's head. The man in the cloak fell backwards, clutching at his stomach as his entrails spilled through his fingers. Blood misted the falling snow. He saw Stelgar grinning, cutting the throat of a bloody man wearing a string of boar's teeth around his neck. Rangvald smashed his hammer into the skull of a wild-eyed farmer raving about ghosts, crushing in the side of another man's face on the upswing. Therin loosened a half a dozen arrows, men and women falling like the snow, more coming. Geir had stepped away from the group to better swing his staff. He went low and wiped out three men with a single blow, thigh bones cracking beneath the heavy wood. But the attackers came on, fearless in their insanity. Many hands grabbed at the staff, and as Geir fought to free it, a soldier wearing a cloak of Oscar leapt on him, tearing at his throat with cold blackened fingers. Another woman ran at Jarl, screaming, blue with cold and brandishing a thin stick as though it were a sword. Jarl slammed his shield into her face and she went down, still screaming through a mouthful of bloody teeth.
"Look!"
Olav and Bjarke were both shouting, gesturing toward the wall as they fended off the encroaching mob. Jarl looked and saw gathered snow hanging in the air, in the outline of a great man-shaped beast's giant. Shaggy head and wide shoulders. A stream of deranged attackers threw themselves at the creature, the tops of their heads barely reaching its chest, which still looked somehow like falling snow. Jarl saw shining blades sweep out of the flickering air, saw the creature taking shape, a steaming blood sprayed across its body.
"Giant at the wall!"
Jarl called as a fat man with a spear ran at him. Jarl got his shield up and ducked, swinging his blade at the man's legs. He hit hard enough to feel the bones breaking through the blade, the impact humming through his fingers. The man shrieked and fell. Hot blood dripped from Jarl's beard.
Some of the unarmed people were running in fear now, away from the battle, shouting nonsense. But the soldiers of the keep were picking up weapons, some memory of skill returning. A number fell back from their direct attack, their mad eyes searching for openings.
"At least now we can see the fucker!"
Selgar shouted, sidestepping as an old man tripped over the hacked bodies that surrounded them, dropping his stick. Selgar chopped into the man's face.
"Odin smiles upon us!"
Thorolf called, and the men still standing laughed tightly. A soldier with an axe got to Olaf, though the young fighter managed to take his killer with him by a final swing. Eagle and Havid were also dead. Jarl and his men fought on, trying to keep an eye on the slashing silent giant as the bodies piled up, as their own number dwindled. Katanu fought well, killing 10 men in the space of a few heartbeats. But by then he was visible, dripping with man's blood, and the travelers, the skilled fighters, were edging toward him as their battle raged. One Eye had no doubt that Katanu would fight to his death, but he would lose his only promising hunter.
"Go,"
he said to the Jautja, standing silently behind him, not looking away from the visual.
"Redeem yourselves. Fight well."
They hurried to the lock, thanking him for his leave in respectful clatters. One Eye growled in acceptance of their gratitude, already divorced from concern for their fate. He watched Katanu move with the grace of youth, his form strong, his movements measured. He watched and was pleased. Katanu spun and slashed, knocked men aside with crushing blows, well aware that he was likely to die if the attackers organized. And it was his own fault for not brushing the falling ice from his suit. For all of his care, he'd proven as foolish as the others. He glanced at the travelers frequently, feeling an odd kinship with the men he'd followed to this place of sickness. More than half had fallen, overwhelmed by sheer numbers. But those standing continued their gleeful dance, slaying the howling villagers as committed as any hunter to victory or death. A man had picked up a spear from one of the fallen travelers and rushed at Katanu, screaming, raising the weapon over its head. Katanu dropped to one knee and slashed open the man's gut with his wrist blades, but another with a sword took the opportunity to rush in from the side. The man swung, the tip of the metal blade slicing deeply across Katanu's shoulder. Katanu pivoted, still on the ground, and drove his blades into the attacker's chest. He pulled back, but the blade stuck, dragging the dying man in close. Frustrated, he shook his encumbered arm, using his other to strike at a man with a rock in his hands. Wet heat coursed from his bleeding shoulders. Over the screams of the dying and the sick, Katanu heard voices calling out, drawing his attention. He shot a look at the leader and his second, followed their gazes, and saw Shriek and Taroga striding in through the open gate, weaponless, their camouflage turned off. Distracted, Katanu didn't see the man with the axe until it was too late. Jarl had formed a vague idea of what the giants looked like from the blood-splashed monster stabbing men not 20 paces away, but he still felt his eyes widen. These newcomers wore dark metal masks, shining and smooth and ominous. Black beaded braids hung to either side. Each wore a thin gray covering that outlined their bulging physiques, muscles hewn and chiseled like the strongest man's. No armor, no weapons. Jarl glanced at the giant dressed in blood just as it fell to its knees, an axe in its guts. One down and two to take its place.
"Giants at the gate!"
Stelgar shouted, and the men tightened what was left of their defense. Stelgar's cries seemed to direct the mad attackers. At the sight of the giants, the men of the keep seemed driven to new heights of fury. They screamed and ran toward the two massive creatures, howling like animals, slashing each other in their frenzy to reach the new enemy. One giant dropped into a crouch, opening its arms wide. The other, taller, stepped directly into the oncoming attackers, smashing faces and pounding heads. Bones snapped. Men went flying through the snow, broken and bleeding. The tall monster made its way to where Thorolf and Jolt fought back to back, and both men turned to face it. Thorolf rushed in low to slash at its massive legs. Jolt spun away, coming around to thrust at the striding giant with his heavy sword.
Yolt's blade pierced the giant's side, the cut deep. Glowing green poured from the wound. The monster swung around and grabbed Yolt by his head, twisting and pulling, and tore it from Yolt's body. Blood gouted into the air, Yolt's headless corpse crumbling to the snow. The giant threw Yolt's head at one of the keep's raging soldiers, knocking him off his feet. Thorolf slashed at the monster's thighs and danced back, drawing more green blood. The shorter, crouching giant tore at the half-dozen armed men who had crashed into it, ripping arms from sockets, tossing them like sticks. But as more piled on and brutally hacked at the creature, it faltered. Bjarke rushed in and swung his axe, the curved blade opening a thick line of green on the crouching monster's back. It turned and slapped him hard enough to break his neck, dropping him. Theron loosed an arrow at the creature, and more shining green blood poured from where it lodged in the thing's massive chest. The giants were stumbling. The red snow at their feet was spattered with heavy splashes of green. When the taller one turned its back, Jarl ran forward, his sword high, barely keeping his balance on the slippery bodies of dead and dying men. He reached the bleeding giant and brought his blade down and across, howling with joy. His sword sank deep into the side of the monster's neck, green sprayed across his face, hot and bitter, and the giant turned and punched its fist into Jarl's chest. Jarl felt his sternum shatter like ice, and pain like heat shot through him, and a terrible, crushing pressure squeezed his heart. But the giant was slain, the spurt of its terrible blood already slowing. Jarl grinned and died. The battle seemed to die with Jarl the sword's son. Men still screamed, but they were the failing screams of the mortally wounded. The last of the armed madmen had gathered around the two dying giants, were expending their fury in thrusts and jabs at the strange beasts. Thorolf walked behind the crazed men, slashing their throats easily. The third giant, the one that had hidden, was also down. Stelgar could only see a mass of green and red in the snow, unmoving. Across the blood-soaked yard he saw the men and women who hadn't fought, a dozen or so huddled together by the stables. They sang and cried and fell to their knees, weeping, shaking from cold or from whatever madness had cursed Skeld's keep. Cursed. Thorolf, Rangvald the Hammer, and Therin still stood, scratched and bloodied, but alive. Everyone else was dead. They had taken Skeld's keep, but Stelgar didn't want it. No one would. They should set it on fire. Stelgar directed the others to put the dying to rest and walked where Jarl lay, and squatted next to him. Jarl stared up into the falling snow, not caring that it landed in his eyes. Stelgar was happy for Jarl, but also felt an emptiness. He would miss his brother.
Stelgar!
Stelgar looked up at the urgency in Thorolf's voice, saw Thorolf pointing at him, saw Rangvald and Therin both running toward him. He turned his head. Behind him towered the giant dressed in blood, not dead after all. Katanu woke up to One Eye clattering in his ear.
You're not dead. Pressure patch the suit, inject the stim, and get up. Use the pulse beam to ensure your safe return to the ship. This hunt is over.
Katanu blinked at the reed in his mask. The ship was close. The axe had gone deep, though, and he knelt in a puddle of his own blood, already crusting with ice. His head felt light, hollow. He looked across the battle site and saw that the leader, his trophy, had fallen, his sword buried in Shriek's throat. Taroga was a pile of chopped meat a few paces away. One Eye was surely disgusted by how his students had performed, all bested by men. Many of the travelers had died, but they were also the last standing. The leader's second had gone to kneel by the dead warrior. There were three others who still lived. They walked among the field of fallen men and dispatched them with their swords. Katanu crawled to his feet and staggered toward the second, holding his guts in with one cold arm. He wasn't sure what he meant to do, but he couldn't imagine cutting the brave men down with his pulse beam. He had failed, they had not. He stopped behind the second, swaying on his feet. He expected the pale man to stand up and kill him, but it only stood, staring up at him, its eyes moving back and forth. Curious, perhaps, Cut-Anu slowly lifted his free claw and reached for his mask. The other three surviving travelers had run toward them, but the second spoke in its strange tongue, and they only stood by, their weapons ready. Cut-Anu wanted to express to the man that he, Cut-Anu, son of Ish'ande, had learned from this hunt. Whether or not the man understood was not the point. He unlatched his mask and pulled it free. The cold was like a slap and the air was foul, but he liked the feel against his fevered skin. He was alive. He looked at the man, wishing that he could read its face or understand its language. He held his mask out, an offering, a trophy. After a long moment, the man reached out and took it. Cut-Anu was glad. The giant turned and staggered for the gate, stumbling, parts of it seeming to disappear into the snow. In seconds, it was gone.
"What the fuck was that?"
Rungholt said. Stelgar held up a fine, heavy helmet, big enough to cradle a babe.
"We beat him, that's what. He pays tribute to our dead."
He bent and placed the helmet on Jarl's chest.
"I will see you in Asgard, brother."
"We're leaving and burning this cursed place to the ground," Stelgar said. "Get those people to start gathering wood."
Theron nodded somberly. "The Valkyries will see the smoke and come to lead our brave friends to Valhall. Skeld's keep will make a fine pyre."
"It's the least he can do, spitting on Jarl's feet like that,"
Thorolf said. And even Stelgar had to chuckle. It was a good joke.
Indigenous Species by Kevin J. Anderson. 1. The colony planet was named Hardscrabble, and that should have been his first clue. Filled with hope and determination, Jarek and the other 150 colonists should never have believed the propaganda or the brochures from the colonization initiative. But now they were stuck on this bleak planet, to live or die depending on their own grit and resourcefulness. As he drove the mammoth combine farming vehicle across the rugged landscape, Jarek made a sour face as he remembered the obviously doctored images in the database. But the young man's father, Davin, had been convinced. Davin was a dreamer, optimistic, and, worse, charismatic. He had persuaded half of his extended family and a large group of friends to join him on the venture, and all of them believed that this unclaimed planet would be a new opportunity, a new home. No one had thought to wonder why no one else wanted Hardscrabble. The Combine's engine hummed and rumbled, and Jarek guided the giant vehicle with ease and long familiarity. The huge treads rolled along the dirt roadway, taking him around the field patches of enhanced wheat and corn. The colonization initiative had given their group a basic setup allotment with tools and supplies, preserved food, crop seeds, livestock embryos, prefabricated buildings, large agricultural equipment, and a sketchy survey database with meteorological recordings and a cursory biological summary obtained by automated satellites. When they had arrived on Hardscrabble a year ago, the colonists found a bleak world, with a temperate climate and breathable, though sour, air. Native plants provided oxygen, but the soil was not hospitable to Earth-based life forms, requiring a great deal of fertilizer. Their herd animals could not digest the local species of grasses. Hardscrabble's insect and bird analogs were inedible, and often just a nuisance. None of the animal life could be considered game, and some indigenous creatures were deadly predators, as the colonists had discovered in the first year. A special plot of land had been designated as the settlement's own cemetery. Many would have opted to jump aboard the next supply ship that arrived on Hardscrabble, except that no ship was coming. This was their world now. Sink or swim. As he drove along, Jarek clenched his hand into a fist and slammed it down on the polymer control deck of the raised cab. The colonization initiative had lied to them. The 150 dreamers here were not afraid of hard work, and none of them expected this to be easy, but they had expected honesty. Sometimes when he was alone in the giant machine, driving across the virgin landscape, Jerick would let his anger and disappointment get the best of him. Yes, he had a temper, and he knew it. His father kept telling him in a calm and patient voice that he was just a young man, and had much to learn. But Jerick was determined, along with his fellow colonists. Beating the land into submission, they first planted a fast-growing genetically modified grass that soon covered the rolling hills, laying down a soil matrix and providing pasture land for the first 10 cattle revived from stored embryos. Other fields of grain ripened quickly, increasing the stores. Step by step, they were gaining a foothold. The hardscrabble colony would survive. Just barely. Jerick drove the mammoth agricultural machine that could plow and fertilize the soil, plant crops, and later harvest them. The solar panels on the combine's roof soaked up energy from the overcast sky. On his regular rounds of the valley, he inspected the crops, the spreading pasture land. The 10 head of cattle grazed peacefully on the well-defined fields of green grass and the rolling hills. Beyond the grassland lay darker, thickly forested hills that remained unexplored. As he reached the rolling, grassy hills, he expected to see the cattle placidly grazing, as they did every day. The 10 animals tended to stick together, given the limitations of the fertilized pasture land. He scanned for the locator pings on his control screen and frowned. No movement. When he topped a low rise and saw the discolorations on the grass, the splashes of red, the slumped brown shapes, he felt suddenly sick. Swallowing hard, he accelerated the mammoth combine, rolling the treads across the uneven ground and not even noticing the vibrations. As he leaned forward to look through the slanted windscreen, he saw the fallen shapes. The cattle, their bodies torn apart and shredded. Jerick wrenched the combine to a halt, sick and infuriated. Leaving the engine thrumming, he popped open the cab door, swung down to the tread, then leaped to the ground. He raced across the blood-stained grass, appalled by what he saw. 6 of the cattle lay before him, or what remained of them. The smell of blood in the air was like a heavy mist of bitter iron. Jerick gritted his teeth and narrowed his eyes as he tried to understand what he was seeing. One of the cow's heads had been torn off and lay discarded, the big bovine eyes staring sightlessly, pink tongue lolling out of its mouth, red blood spattered everywhere in the grass. Its side had been raked open, ribs splintered, entrails pulled out like confetti. One of its hind legs had been ripped off and cast aside. The other 5 cattle were just as mangled, and Jerick found it difficult to determine where one carcass ended and another began. He breathed in and out, his nostrils flaring, his blood boiling. When he heard one of the cattle lowing from the other side of the grassy hill, Jerick just reacted. He ran, thrashing through the grasses, nearly slipping on a sheen of blood and loose intestines. He reached the top of the rise, saw other dead carcasses strewn about, and gaped. The last surviving cow bleated in terror as it tried to struggle away. Long red gashes marked its side. But it couldn't escape the monster. Jerick recognized the horrific creature that had killed 7 colonists last year, the most fearsome indigenous predator on hardscrabble. The grizzly was like a nightmarish crossbreed of a dinosaur and a grizzly bear. Black, spiky fur covered the huge frame. Its pointed, scaly face was like a flattened crocodile's. It had a plated belly, and sharp spines covered its tail. The wide paws were tipped with claws the size of threshing rakes. Before the giant beast could slaughter the last cow, Jerick roared out a wordless challenge, hoping to distract the thing. The grizzly stopped and looked up at him, focusing on new prey. Despite his defiance, Jerick nearly soiled himself. He instantly regretted that he had left his plasma rifle in the combine's cab. Last year, the grizzlies had unexpectedly come out of the nearby hills, massacring livestock as well as colonists, even though the taste of earth animals, or people, was not appetizing to them. The native predators simply slaughtered their victims and left the bodies strewn about. Grizzlies attacked anything that moved. Now the huge beast reared up, turning to face Jerick and leaving the wounded cow to limp away, still bleeding in terror. The young man bolted, desperate to get away. With an ear-splitting roar, the grizzly bounded after him. Sweating hard, Jerick tumbled over the uneven grassy ground, tripping in the blood, springing back to his feet. He raced back toward the mammoth combine, either to take shelter in the cab, or preferably to get the plasma rifle. Despite his panic, he kept thinking that those cattle had been Hardscrabble's future. Jerick wouldn't let some mindless monster kill them all and face no consequences. As he ran, he could hear thundering footfalls ominously close behind him, the crackle of crushed grasses, as if a great machine were barreling down on him. Jerick put on a burst of speed, seeing the safety of the combine ahead. But he wasn't close enough. He couldn't run fast enough. He glanced over his shoulder to see the enormous beast right there, huffing, swinging back an enormous paw. Jerick slipped on the bloody grass, stumbled over a loop of intestine, and fell forward. And that saved him. The paw would have raked across his shoulders and ripped out his spinal column. Instead, the glancing blow just knocked him sprawling on his face. He rolled, crawled toward the nearest carcass. He backed up against the dead mass, panting so hard that each lungful screamed in and out of his mouth. The grizzly lurched forward. Jerick slumped, surrendering, knowing he couldn't outrun or fight the thing. Then he saw a ripple in the air, like a ghostly silhouette of a large man. The shape seemed to be made out of air, water, and invisible motion. The grizzly didn't see the three red dots on its scaled chest plate, like a targeting mark. With a whistling roar, an energy burst ripped through the air. It came out of nowhere and struck the grizzly, leaving a smoking crater of flesh and black blood. The big beast reeled backward, raised its paws, and clawed at its wound. The hulking thing turned to find its attacker, but could see nothing. Jerick heard a rattling, clicking sound, an inhuman sound. The air shimmered again, and the camouflage faded to reveal an armored man standing there. No, it wasn't a man. It wore a strange metal mask with blank eye slits, tufts of hair dangled like tentacles fastened to its skull. The strange hunter let out its clicking, clattering challenge again, like a growl made of rattlesnakes. The hunter was focused on the wounded grizzly. He held a cylinder in his huge clawed hand, then squeezed inset controls. Long, pointed ends snapped out of each end of the cylinder to create a javelin. Cocking back a well-muscled arm, the hunter hurled the javelin, which spun through the air and plunged into the grizzly's upper right chest with a crackle of blue lightning. The big monster clawed at the high-tech weapon, snapped the metal shaft in half, then lumbered toward the barely seen hunter. The rippling, mirror-like camouflage dropped away entirely, and Jerick's strange savior let out another sound of clicking challenge. The hunter drew two long, wicked blades, holding one in each hand, as it stormed forward to face his opponent. The injured grizzly threw itself upon the mysterious hunter, who was a deft fighter. He slashed with the curved blades, drawing bloody designs on the beast's chestplate, and cut the thick, matted fur. The grizzly snapped its powerful jaws, but the hunter drove a wicked blade beneath its scaled jaw and through its palate. Bleeding from mortal wounds, the grizzly thrashed, clawed, and struck the hunter aside, sending him tumbling into the grass. The hunter sprang back to his feet, close to where Jerick lay frozen in amazement and terror. The stranger was at least 9 feet tall and packed with muscles. From the lithe way he moved, the hunter did not seem at all human. Bleeding, dying but not knowing it, the grizzly attacked again. The masked hunter regained his feet, and another weapon popped up on his shoulder, spinning, acquiring a target. 3 bright red dots appeared over the grizzly's heart. Just as the monster spread its clawed arms wide to crush its opponent, a searing blast ripped through its chest, blowing a crater through the sternum and all the way out the back, leaving bent ribs and splintered vertebrae like a crown of bones and gore. With a hissing, choking rumble, the Grizzly collapsed to the ground. The alien hunter stepped back and regarded the carcass, letting out a long succession of clicking growls as he inspected the kill. Jarek kept panting, frozen in amazement as he slumped against the bloody cow carcass. He felt helpless, but oddly not afraid. He didn't know what this hunter was, but he had killed one of the fearsome Grizzlies, the bane of the Hardscrabble colony. The young man swallowed hard, but made no sound. The alien hunter took out a long, saber-like knife, which hummed and then glowed blue. Bending over the dead Grizzly, the hunter tilted up the reptilian's snout, and then with a single sweep of the vibrating blue saber, he decapitated the kill. The energized blade cauterized the stump of the Grizzly's thick neck, and the head rolled away, almost 3 feet wide. Jarek could only guess how heavy it was, yet the alien hunter lifted the trophy with one hand. Hearing his involuntary gasp, the hunter slowly turned, still holding the Grizzly's head. For a long moment, he looked at the young man with unreadable eyes behind the metal mask. The hunter seemed to find him uninteresting, lying there weak and unarmed among the dead cattle. Turning, the stranger stalked away with his trophy, using his free hand to tap controls on the armored suit. The mirror-like ripples swallowed him up in a blanket of camouflage, and Jarek couldn't see him anymore. Eventually, the young man got back to his feet, covered with blood, shaking. He looked around at the massacre. The Grizzlies were horrifying enough, but now he had just seen another predator on Hardscrabble that was far more deadly. 2. It was late afternoon by the time Jarek drove the mammoth combine back to the colony settlement. The dull gray sky showed only intermittent patches of olive green. Ahead, he saw the fenced village compound. The tall barrier wall of spiked tree trunks surrounded the huddled prefab buildings. Upon first arriving, the colonists never dreamed they would have to make a fortress of their little settlement, but after the previous year's Grizzly depredations, colony leader Davin had sent crews into the hills to cut down trees and use the long trunks as a primitive but effective stockade. After that first year, the colonists realized they had been naive to bring only a dozen plasma rifles, confident they would have a peaceful settlement, but that was predicated on a peaceful planet, without fierce Grizzlies that came out of the hills once a year. The stockade's defenses were medieval, but effective. As he drove up to the tall gate, Jarek could still feel the drying blood all over his hands and his clothes. He kept trying to process what he had seen. Their year-old cattle had been slaughtered, and the colonists would have to start from scratch with new embryos. All that vital food, lost. Even though it would be nightfall soon, his father might send out crews with big spotlights and plasma rifles to harvest the meat from the mutilated animals, if he could get any volunteers to go out after dark. But Jarek knew the carcasses would be safe enough until tomorrow, since the other predators on Hardscrabble wouldn't eat the foul-tasting earth meat. As he rolled the mammoth combine through the open stockade gates, people came out to greet him. But as soon as he swung down from the cab, covered in blood and looking distraught, they knew something was wrong. His father hurried up to him, his face filled with alarm, creases deepening in lines along his cheeks.
"What is it?"
He grabbed Jarek's shoulders, holding him at arm's length.
"What happened?"
The young man let out a long, shaking sigh. "The Grizzlies are back." The colonists moaned and muttered amongst themselves. His father stepped back to inspect Jarek, looking at all the blood.
"Are you injured? Did it attack you?"
"The Grizzly killed all of our cattle, and yes, it attacked me. But I'm not hurt. There's... more." He described the strange, camouflaged hunter, the inhuman being with superior weapons, how it had killed the Grizzly and taken the head as a trophy. More colonists gathered as the twilight set in. Jarek told his story again, while Davin furrowed his brow and started recalculating. Without the cattle grazing, all that fertile grassland is now wasted acreage. New embryos will take months to revive, and we don't have another crop in place on that pasture land. He shook his head. This is not good. Not good. Jarek widened his eyes, alarmed. Did you hear what I said, Father? The Grizzlies are back. Two broad-shouldered men closed the stockade doors behind the mammoth combine. While Davin seemed preoccupied with other concerns, Jarek shouted to the other colonists. Get our plasma rifles and set out a watch from the top of the stockade. We better be prepared. Davin nodded.
Good idea, although last year this stockade was proof against the Grizzlies. They left us alone.
Jarek scratched dried blood from his cheek and said quietly,
Maybe so, but the Grizzlies aren't the only threat I'm worried about.
As darkness closed in, sudden spears of fire erupted in the surrounding hills. The dark forests gushed flame and orange explosions. Jarek pulled himself up to one of the watch platforms just above the stockade wall, staring into the gathering darkness. Davin climbed up next to him.
What could that possibly be? It looks like a war zone.
That other hunter? The way he killed the Grizzly? I've never seen anything so cold and deadly in my life. And what if there's more than one of them? Davin watched the string of explosions in the hills. Even though the blasts were far away, they could hear faint, bestial roars in the sudden, empty silence.
Maybe they're hunting and killing Grizzlies. And good luck to them, if that's what they're doing,
Jarek replied as he looked at the line of explosions.
Or maybe they're driving the Grizzlies down here into the valley where they can fight them.
3. Hardscrabble had never been a pleasant place, but now it was a battlefield, monsters against monsters. Explosions continued throughout the night. The roars of Grizzlies and the bright flares put the entire colony on edge. The people huddled inside the stockade, knowing that the sharpened log walls were only a suggestion of security. If either of the two deadly species put their minds to it, they could easily crash through the wooden wall. Soft pink dawn suffused the landscape. Standing on the observation platform again, Jarek used a pair of zoom lenses to scan across the carefully tended fields. He couldn't tear his eyes from the dark furrows that energy weapons had torn through the croplands. During the night, the orange glow of continued explosions had sickened him. Now, at daybreak, he saw that a section of their corn and wheat fields had been burned and trampled. 3 huge dead Grizzlies lay sprawled on the ground, also decapitated, their heads taken as trophies, their bodies discarded in the middle of the colony fields. Huffing with the effort, his father climbed up beside him, keeping his silence. Without a word, Jarek handed his father the zoom lenses. Davin stared ahead, going pale.
Our crops.
Jarek watched the smoke rising into the sky where it mingled with the gray, overcast clouds. We have to retrieve the dead cattle, process the meat so we at least get something out of it. Can't waste a scrap now. Davin nodded, still staring through the lenses.
We should awaken more embryos right away. The pasture land is still good, even if the cattle are dead.
Anger swelled within Jarek.
The pasture land? Father, our people can't even leave the stockade with those things out there.
Davin lowered the lenses and glanced at his son.
Last year the Grizzlies returned to the hills after a time. It'll take that long for the embryos to turn into calves anyway. We have to hope. And prepare.
But those other things, those alien predators, they're just hunting the Grizzlies for sport.
Davin remained stubborn.
Then when the Grizzlies are gone, the hunters will leave too. We'll be fine.
Jarek knew he could never penetrate the man's lofty and stubborn optimism.
Our people may very well starve. He muttered. We had few enough advantages on this planet.
We were barely holding on by our fingernails as it was. He shook his head. And we can't send a distress beacon. It would take years before we get a response. The colonization initiative just abandoned us on Hardscrabble. By the time a scout ship comes to check on us, maybe in 10 years, they'll just find a ghost town.
We'll survive, Davin said, hardening his voice. We will. We have extra stores. We can spread out ponds of nutritionally dense algae and grow that if we need to. It tastes like shit, but we can survive on it. And even with the burn damage, we'll salvage some of our crops. Only if those things go away, Jarek insisted.
As if to challenge them, a shimmering ripple of a humanoid form sprinted across the fields, stepping over the flattened roadway that led up to the stockade. Jarek caught the motion out of the corner of his eye, and he turned to study it, recognizing one of the alien predators in its camouflage disguise. Letting his shimmering cloak dissipate, the imposing figure came up to stand before the stockade, glancing at them, assessing their defenses. This one looked different from the hunter Jarek had faced the day before. He seemed to find their wooden walls laughably primitive. The flicker changed in a quicksilver blur, and the creature vanished entirely. Davin stared at the empty air in angry disgust, and it was clear that he shared his son's doubts about the colony's chances for survival. The older man climbed down from the observation platform, while Jarek used the zoom lenses to scan the landscape again. Obsessed. He didn't want to move. Deep in the hills, the whistling explosions and flashes of fire continued intermittently, far away. But now the young man focused on another turmoil much closer at hand. In the nearest field of swift-growing wheat, a huge and hairy grizzly loomed out of the morning mist like a monstrous shadow. The dark fur on its left side was singed and scabbed, as if it had been injured by one of the hunter's energy weapons. The big beast stalked forward, snarling, sniffing. Jarek glimpsed the mirror flicker again as the armored alien predator made itself partially visible. The great grizzly generally relied on its sense of smell and hearing, so the camouflage wouldn't be a perfect defense. The beast's black tongue flicked out of its reptilian snout, and it roared, sweeping its rake-like claws from side to side, looking for its target. Facing off, the alien hunter dashed toward the grizzly, then disappeared entirely as its camouflage locked in. The wounded beast lumbered along, wading through the wheat field, destroying the precious stalks as it looked for the alien hunter it could sense nearby. Seemingly coming out of nowhere, a line of fire licked across the ground like a fire hose of flames. The hunter was intentionally burning the fields to madden the animal. The grizzly stumbled away from the dark smoke and crackling flames. The hunter set more of the crops aflame, boxing in the huge beast. Jarek watched, appalled.
That's our field! Damn you!
The alien predator seemed not to care, using the flames to drive the grizzly. The predator was a humanoid-shaped blur against the rising fire. The furry beast charged directly into the flames, somehow finding its enemy. The predator blasted his prey with the flamethrower, but the heat rolled off the big animal's reptilian chestplate. Facing a real battle now, the hunter switched off his camouflage field and withdrew two long knives before throwing himself at the smoke-maddened grizzly. The furry creature smacked him sideways, bowling the predator aside. The armored hunter rolled through the rising fires in the field, stumbled back to his feet, then lunged forward again with both knives extended. His snake-like hair tentacles writhed, and through his metal mask, he let out a bellow that sounded just as primal as the grizzly's. They engaged. The hunter's sharp blades dipped into the grizzly's body again and again, like a stinging wasp. With massive arms, the beast clasped the hunter, wrapped around his body, and squeezed tight. Long claws struck sparks across the armor, damaging it. Then the predator clamped a small, self-adhering explosive to the grizzly's back. With a brief, bright flare, the explosion blasted through the beast's vertebrae and into its chest cavity, incinerating its heart and spine. The huge monster collapsed, dead, while the predator reeled backward, barely able to keep his own footing. His shredded armor sparked with random energy pulses, and his body leaked runnels of acid green blood. Though obviously wounded, the predator remained upright over his kill. The dead grizzly lay twitching, smoking. The burning fields crackled around them. Watching the carnage from his observation platform, Jerick muttered, "Damn you." Unexpectedly, he saw the stockade gate open below. He leaned over the sharpened wooden barrier. What the hell? A figure stepped out onto the wide, trampled road. A lone man, carrying a plasma rifle. His father. Davin closed the gate behind him and marched down the road toward the burning wheat field, the dead grizzly, and the wounded predator. Out in the burning field, the hunter was preoccupied with decapitating his kill, sawing through the thick neck. Jerick shouted, "Father, come back here! What are you doing?" Davin turned to him, held up his rifle, and called back to his son. "You're right. Somebody has to fight for our colony." Though obviously determined, he looked very small. "If that predator is wounded, this might be our only opportunity to hurt one of them." Davin began to sprint ahead. "Come back!" Jerick called. What if the man's actions simply enraged the other alien hunters? Some of his fellow colonists had climbed the corners of the stockade, looking out over the wall. Several others opened the stockade gate to watch. His father was foolishly convinced he was right. As always. And Jerick knew the man wasn't always right. As he approached the wounded predator hunched over the carcass of the grizzly, Davin opened fire with the plasma rifle. But most of his shots went wild, striking the churned ground. One even hit the side of the fallen carcass, burning a new hole in the thick, furred pelt. The muscular alien stood, dripping with dark, grisly blood, as well as his own bright green blood from his wounds. Davin raised the plasma rifle and shot again. One of the energy blasts ricocheted off the predator's hip, striking sparks from the alien's armor, but not seeming to wound him. Transient spiderwebs of static flickered up and down the alien's body as the camouflage field flickered on, then faded again. Emboldened, his father yelled bravely, stupidly. He shot four more times, missing repeatedly, until one blast struck the predator's shoulder and destroyed the pop-up energy gun mounted there. The muscular hunter seemed angry rather than intimidated. He grasped at his belt and removed a metal cylinder, squeezing it. The long, pointed javelin ends extended and then locked into place with a snick. Davin strode forward, firing indiscriminately. Poorly. Though the colony leader was still far away, the predator cocked back his arm and hurled the whistling, crackling javelin. Jerick screamed. Helpless. His father couldn't duck fast enough, though he managed to fire twice more, and missed both times. The energized javelin slid through his abdomen, piercing him smoothly. Davin stopped in his tracks, staggered forward two more steps, then fell sideways. Jerick howled, unable to tear his eyes from the zoom lenses. "No!" Limping, the predator stalked forward, moving sluggishly from his own injuries. He stopped, looming over Davin's body. Through the lenses, Jerick could see his father grasp at the smooth, sharp end of the javelin, but couldn't get a grip with all the blood. The predator grabbed his weapon and slid it back out. The pointed ends retracted into the handle. Davin lay there, choking, already dead but not yet realizing it. The predator turned his smooth metal mask toward the distant stockade where Jerick stood screaming and shouting. After a moment of consideration, the predator bent down, slashed Davin's neck with his jagged blade. He grasped the colony leader's hair and peeled the head back. Then, with a brutal yank, he pulled off the head along with several vertebrae and the frayed ends of the man's spinal cord. The predator held up Davin's head like an unimpressive trophy, tucked it onto a clip at his side, then he retrieved the much larger head of the grizzly. He carried both trophies as he limped off into the dissipating smoke and flames of the destroyed field.